Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with...
Kate Schindel.
Who plays?
Allison Bechdel.
In Fun Home, the Tony-winning show, now on the national tour, swinging through the National Theater, now through May 13th. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be here. I have a crush on DC, and I have a crush on radio, so this is like the perfect storm for me.
Awesome. Well, the show, I saw it the other night, it's such a great show.
Thank you.
So awesome. You can see why it cleaned up, what was it, 2 years ago at the Tony?
Two years ago. Yeah, last year was Hamilton, so there were a couple other things that won, but mostly the Hamilton juggernaut, and then the year before this. This show was developed at the Public Theater around the same time as Hamilton, and they sort of came up through the ranks together. Turned into they're very different shows, obviously, but
so much creative juices flowing all around that same
Public Theater doesn't mess around.
Awesome. Well, you're in it, and I just saw it, but let's say people don't know anything about it. Give them the brief, you know, I guess, plot summary. What's
sure.
going on here?
You know, it's such a hard show to do an elevator pitch for because it's about life and identity and coming to terms with your parents' humanity outside and apart from the fact that they're your parents, you know? So a quick summary is that Allison Bechdel is actually a real person. She wrote a graphic memoir called Fun Home, which in graphic novel memoir circles is quite well known and really acclaimed. Doesn't necessarily scream out to be a musical, but thank God Lisa Krohn got her hands on it and Janine Tesorian decided, like, we know how to do this. So in the show, we see adult Allison, who's 43, looking back at her life and her childhood and then her first year in college with an eye toward writing this book. And what ends up happening is that during the process of trying to find the right images and the right captions, she gets pulled into her memories in a way that she didn't expect. It is an exercise in how to deal with her father as a human being rather than just as her father, which I think many of us go through in our 20s and 30s. But when your dad died when you were 19 or 18, you don't always get that same experience. And also trying to solve a bit of a mystery. Bruce Bechdel, like I said, died when Allison was a freshman in college. The family thinks it was a suicide, but nobody knows for sure. And she's sort of collecting pieces of information and observations to try and put together what happened to her dad and why he died so young. So at the same age that she is now.
Right.
So it's about that.
And the title, Fun Home, because it's a funeral home.
Right, the family...
That's not a spoiler, is it? We learned that pretty early in the show.
It's the title.
Yeah.
Allison's father was a school teacher, her mother was an actor, and then they had a family funeral home that they ran sort of, I don't know, can you run a funeral home part-time? In this small town in Pennsylvania called Beach Creek.
Yeah, it's. I think it's important that early in the show, you actually kind of come out and say, like, hey,
right,
he's gay, I'm gay, he committed suicide. Like, you say it right up from the top, and then we kind of piece these together. Do you think that was intentionally done that way, rather than being a mystery and not knowing that?
I guess in some ways that would be a Lisa question. But really, I feel like Allison, perhaps as a person, but certainly as a character, is rather dispassionate about the things that have happened in her lives, which is why it's fascinating to watch her get drawn in to this puzzle that she's trying to solve. And so I would imagine that part of it is, hey, you know, this was my life and now I'm going to write a book about it and I'm going to draw this and caption it this and then I'm going to publish it and buy. And that, I think, is why it's affecting to see her suddenly have to start dealing with the death of her father in a way that she hasn't before. Why do you think?
I think it's just sort of put there almost, I don't know, like an American Beauty or Sunset Boulevard, where
right.
it's just like, hey, this is going to happen. And I guess it would have just maybe been a little more confusing seeing all these pieces, not knowing where it's going. I don't know. I think it kind of sets your expectations at a certain, and then you're picking up on a lot of the other little clues along the way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and obviously there are really strong LGBT themes in our show. Allison is a very out and comfortable with it lesbian, and her father was a gay man who was not out or comfortable and was sort of sneaking around in the small town in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot to be said for being able to recognize and live your own identity and the truth that bad things can happen if you don't. But all that said, sometimes I hesitate to get into that too much in interviews about the show because, not because I'm anything but proud of the story we're telling, but because I think that there are people out there who will hear it and say, oh, you know what? It's a gay show. It's not for me. And it's not. First of all, it's not explicit. Second of all, to me, it's about humanity. Everybody has things that they don't talk about in their family. And for Allison and her father, it was, Dad, you're gay and I'm gay and we're the only two gay people we know. Should we talk about that?
But to your point, that can be extrapolated exactly. to any, that can be universal, any yeah. connection that someone has with their parent and you know, coming to that same age and everything. You know, it doesn't right. have to be that they're gay. It could be anything.
It could be anything. Well, at the end of the play, there's this scene where Allison and her father are in the car mm-hmm. and they're talking about the light. Right. And they're talking about little things. They're not talking about the elephant that's sitting in the back seat. Mm. And I've had any number of people come up to me afterward and say, you know, I did not go through what Allison and her father went through, but I've definitely been on that car ride. I think everybody's been on that car ride,
oh,
you
yeah.
know?
Totally. And before we go too far down into the deep, dark, awesomely sure. powerful stuff, we have to tell our listeners, I was surprised at how hilarious this
yeah,
show was.
Yeah.
I guess it's sort of funeral home, fun home. I mean, it's yeah. sort of that gallows humor baked right into the title, too. But, man, it was like some of those scenes, especially when I'm trying to think of something, the kids are dancing, you
yeah.
know, about, you know, on top of the casket, or I'm changing my major to Joan. Like,
right.
that thing is freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
So talk about why, you know, it's not all deep, dark stuff, too, and how they're actually going to come and have a riot at this thing, too.
Well, I mean, it is funny because when we start talking about the show, there is always a point that I catch myself and say, this sounds as entertaining as eating broccoli. but it's a fun show. You know, there's a lot of lightness because kids find lightness. You know, we have three kids in our show, and one of them plays Allison as a child, and then her two brothers. And so they, you know, they have a musical number that sounds like a Jackson 5 song where they're dancing around for a commercial for the funeral home. The scenes, my favorite scenes to watch are the ones with medium Allison, because mm-hmm. we should probably tell your listeners that in this play, Allison appears at three different ages.
Yes, and the actresses that play them are?
Right. Ali Baldacchino plays small Allison, and this young lady named Abby Corrigan plays medium Allison. And
she's great.
For grins, this is Abby's first professional job.
Really?
She just finished high school last year.
Yep. Oh, she was great.
She's a freak. She's well, totally. Really good. I just watch her with awe. Anyway, so the scenes in which medium Allison is away at college and sort of starting to figure out, and I think it's hilarious that she figured out that she was a lesbian by reading a book, because that's right. perfect.
Sent to her by her dad. Was
right.
it Colette?
Well, there's that one, but then there's also the one that she found at the bookstore.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah,
I think she's started to recognize, you know, as a child and then as a teenager, that something is different about her and she can't put her finger on what, which is why Ring of Keys is so powerful. You know, she sees this this woman in a diner and goes, oh, you're like me, with the cropped hair and the jeans
and
the big ring of keys. And and she doesn't know why. And it's a really powerful song for small Allison to sing, that you sort of see where it comes from. I am one of those who really has a problem, and I'm straight, I should say that, but really has a problem with these folks who talk about being gay like it's a choice. I don't know. I know a lot of people who are LGBT, and none of them picked it. Mm-hmm. Not one of them would say, oh yeah, I got to age 14 and I decided, why not make my life a lot harder?
Right, right.
I'll be gay.
Right. right.
And
why
don't
I add roadblocks to my life?
Yeah, no, exactly. Let's create some huge hurdles right. for myself.
Hey, I'm with you.
Yeah. And so, you know, I go back to the fact that when I had my first crush on a boy when I was 5. Everybody thought it was adorable, you know? and I wonder how my life would have been different if that had been a little girl instead of a little boy. And right. so instead of being cute, I was a mistake that God made,
right.
you know? I mean, no wonder.
And then the ripple of that, the
absolutely.
Older you get too, yeah.
I mean, so I guess I should just kind of disclose that I believe that, yes, it's you wake up one day and you go, there's someone that feels familiar to me. And that's what my life should be. And so that's the discovery that small Allison starts to make, but she's like 10. And then medium Allison gets to college and she's standing there saying, please God, don't let me be a homosexual. Mm. But she is, you know, what are you going to do? And so I think that it's a really, it's a really fantastic way for an audience member who's not quite sure about all that to try to understand how that looks mm-hmm. for someone who's going through it in real time.
And speaking of how that looks in terms of, you're talking a lot about this nature versus nurture idea, mm-hmm. except we're talking about it's nature. Yeah. But you're talking about how that looks and presented on stage. And I think that's one of like the cool, edgy, groundbreaking things of this is how you're weaving in and out. The three generations are on stage at the same time a lot.
Right.
I guess we've seen it in, I guess, in a more magical realist, like Scrooge watching something.
Right.
But we don't really see it like this so often where it's like you're actually interacting with your memories like that.
Right.
Your character has the ability to say caption and like break in at any moment and comment on something that's going on in the past.
Yeah. In real life, the way that this show would play out, I think, is that Allison, me, would be going through a trunk and pick out a picture and say, I should draw that. And the caption would be this. But in the show, she sees things that are, you know, playing out in front of her eyes, and she sort of takes a snapshot of it and tries to come up with a caption for it. So I do say caption a lot. And there's a certain amount, I think, of conjuring of it. But as the show goes on, my interpretation is that Allison is less able to command what's happening and more sort of being driven by the things that are popping into her head until she, I believe, finds, you know, a stack of letters from her dad, which she probably never read because she was mad at him because they weren't talking.
Right.
And then he died. You know, I mean, that's a pretty major thing to go through. But I would come back to your point a few minutes ago that the story is told with so much heart and humor. You know, the scenes, one of the reason that the scenes in the dorm room are some of my favorites is because they're so funny.
Hilarious.
You know, it's not just like, here's two girls with sexual tension. You know, it's people talking to each other in the way that real people talk.
The awkward things that come out of your mouth when you're trying.
Yeah, exactly. I sit there watching it sometimes because I'm on stage the whole show and I watch everything.
Yeah.
And I think, God, if I had a window back to watch myself the first time I kissed a guy, I would just be mortified. I would want to leave the planet. Like, just please don't make me see that. So, yeah, it's funny to imagine that.
That's so great. We've talked about the heavy themes. We've talked about the funnier stuff. We got to go. Let's dive into the music more because, man, it's been lodged in my head for like 3 days since I saw this thing. Do you have a particular number that you every night look forward to being performed, either that you get to do or watching the other characters get to do?
I like so many of them. I mean, it's hard not to like watching Changing My Major. I love the song Days and Days that the mother sings late in the show because she's such... Susan is so good in our show, but she's kind of a sleeper. You know, you notice that she's there and she's really good, but the role is varying degrees of thankless sometimes up to that point. And then she just lets it rip with this amazing song that she sings the crap out of. And it's so good. And there's a song called Maps that my character sings where she's trying to figure out what she knows besides what her dad has taught her. Like the lyric is, what do you know that's not your dad's mythology?
Wow.
And so she's trying to...
That's a powerful line right there.
Trying to step out of what her father told her about the world and just start with the basics. Okay, like he was born here, he died here, and this is where our house was. So he lived his whole life almost in this very small circle. No wonder he couldn't get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's a really essential part of solving the mystery. In general, I would say that there's a lot of good music, and it, for the most part, has a more singer-songwriter vibe than what I think people traditionally expect of a musical.
Right. It's less show-tuney and more...
It's more similar to what you might hear on the radio,
right,
with the exception of two numbers, which are kind of pastiche songs of what... similar to what Allison would have been listening to when she was growing up. We have one that sounds a lot like a Partridge Family song. We have one that sounds a lot like a Jackson 5 song that the
you
kids
see you're watching
perform.
The TV too, so you kind of see these.
So, you know, when she needs to sort of escape into her imagination, those are the musical references of her childhood.
Right.
Yeah.
I just can't stop. Welcome to the fun home. Yeah. It's just stuck in my head, man. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That is what people like me want, to curse you with imagining our show over and over again.
Oh, it's so funny. Awesome. Tell me about the guy that plays your dad, the actor.
Robert.
Have we mentioned Robert?
We have not mentioned Robert.
We got to mention Robert.
We're about to. Right. His name is Robert Petkoff. He's a terrific actor. He's done everything from, you know, Anything Goes on Broadway to All the Way, the Lyndon Johnson play. He's done Sweeney Todd. He's had a long and fantastic career. Ragtime, you know, he talks about Romeo and Juliet when he did that. It's an incredibly difficult role because
it's like a tortured guy. That,
I mean, it's hard not to just play that character as a miserable person who has a secret. And Robert finds all these shades of affection for his kids, even when he is frustrated or trying to figure out what to do. You know, he has to, flirt with young men, and then the same actor comes in and he's pitching him a casket. You know, I mean, it is a real tour de force of a role and a performance, and I don't know how I would approach that role if I were him, but I'm glad it's him because it's really an accomplishment what he's doing.
It's just an amazing show.
That's
we could go on
show.
And on and ever.
We could.
Tell me about yourself. How did you get into acting?
When I was 12 years old, with no evidence that I would be any good at it or had any real affinity or talent, decided I wanted to be an actor. And so I did high school shows like everybody does. I went to Northwestern to study theater. And here I am, you know. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of students and parents who say, oh, I want to study theater. What should I do? And the parents just say, she wants to study theater. You know, what's the fallback career? And I'm a big advocate of going and studying as if you are doing it for your life.
Right.
I'm going to minor in theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because you're just planning to fail. The fallback career thing, I think, is it's just a quirk of our industry. You know, you wouldn't take the bar exam without going to law school. Like, why would you think you could be an actor just by treating it as a hobby? Right. So, you know, almost every producer, casting director, agent, you can make a long list, theater publicist, et cetera, I know, started as an actor. And then at a certain point, they went, this isn't for me, but I still love the industry. I love the art of it and the theater of it. Mm-hmm. So what else could I do in the business? And so I'm a big advocate for just getting the best possible education you can and then giving it a go. That said, people ask me fairly often, do you ever think of doing something else? And my answer is, yeah, like every 2 weeks. And if you don't, you're insane or you're just super successful. But it's a grind. I mean, people have asked me often, well, what's next? Like, I don't care. I've got a job till October. After that, I'm going to figure it out. But I am sure enjoying this year-long odyssey.
Regardless of what's next, though, once you put a bow on this show at the end of May in D.C., but when you're done through October, what do you think you're going to take with you from this? Like, I mean, I'm sure you came down on the nature versus nurture thing the same way before the show.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's certain things you already had, but, you know, what are you going to take with this? How's this coloring your life going forward?
Well, there are a few things. I mean, it's also a particularly interesting moment to be touring this show across the country, right? So there are a few things that I think are important. First, you learn a lot. I bought a car so I could drive this tour. I've toured in the past, but I traveled with the company, and mostly the company flies. But I wanted to dive into our country in a little different
America.
Way. Yeah. I mean, I've seen America. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time traveling our great United States. But after the election, I looked at my Facebook feed and I saw a lot of people, many of them like-minded, who said, you know, I don't even know what country I'm living in. And my feeling about that is, you know what? You might not. We travel a lot of times from New York to San Diego to Chicago. You know, we are many actors and theater professionals are transient, but we're transient to like the nice places, you know, and I don't mean that as a disrespectful statement about small town America. It's just that we tend to go to more established, affluent communities. Right. And I should here give a nod to the fact that artists are often the first group to, let's say, I don't want to use the word gentrify because it's become such a pejorative in some ways, but to sort of colonize areas that a lot of other people don't want to live. So there is that.
I got you.
But you just observe different things at a truck stop in Kentucky or West Virginia or New Mexico or whatever than you do, you know, getting on a plane at LAX and getting off a plane in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I think that those things are not just important. I think that those observations are fundamental to what the hell is going on in our country where we're just talking past each other a lot. You know, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 40.
32.
32. Okay, so you got a minute. But when I was growing up, you didn't get your news from people who agreed with you. You got your news from news people, and you never knew what they thought.
Right.
And now, because we have such a flood of information all the time, everywhere, the people who are curating it for us are curating it within certain parameters. And nobody's figured out how to manage that yet. I mean, you can put together an algorithm, but there's no algorithm for listening, and there's no algorithm for treating people with respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there are shortcuts for those things either. The only way to make someone feel like you respect them is to treat them with actual respect. The only way to communicate that you are listening is to just sit down and listen, and then respond, and then listen some more. And so that's all a really long way of saying that my observations as we travel are sort of more about the way that the show is received in places where people questioned how it would be received, like Durham. A lot of people in the era of HB2 were like, you're taking Fun Home to North Carolina?
Yeah, you know what? Like?
Durham was sold out before we even opened in Cleveland.
That's awesome.
I mean, there are a lot of people in North Carolina looking around and saying, these guys don't speak for me.
Right.
We love the theater and we are open-minded and we are caring and we want to support this. And that's great because that gives us all a place to start from, just being open-minded and talking to one another. I actually think, I wrote a book a few years ago, and I actually think that this experience, even before the election, felt like a book to me. And it's just, it's kind of uncanny how, you know, we were in Cleveland when the Indians made it through their, I guess it's the ALCS.
Yeah.
And then we went to Durham real quick, and then we went to Chicago for the World Series. And then a week later was the election. And, you know, to see the difference in Chicago between those 2 weeks was spectacularly interesting to me. And then also, you know, to be at a theater right on State Street where there were just thousands of protesters pouring down the street every night for hours. We were in Denver for the Women's March. I thought it would be kind of a low-key version of the Women's March. It was not. It was like 200,000 people in the streets.
And a mile higher than everyone else,
and
too.
A mile higher. And they had so to work harder double. To breathe. Yeah. So that gets extra points. Yeah. So it is just fascinating. It's all fascinating to me.
Totally.
Anyway.
But here in D.C., bringing it full circle.
I love D.C.
Why should we come out? What's the final sell?
This is a show for people who like the theater. It's a show for people who like musicals and want to see what the next generation of musicals look like. It's also a show, I think, for people who aren't sure they like musicals because they just think of the sort of jazz hands model of what a musical is. And, you know, it's a really tightly well-told story that happens in 100 minutes. It's one act, no intermission. You get
straight
on the ride.
Through.
Yep. You get on the ride and by the time the lights come up, it's over. And it is, again, it's, if you like the theater, you should come see this show. That's about, it's a, to me, it's about as close to a masterpiece as I've ever been in. The only other show that I've been in that I thought was, well, no, there have been two that I thought were equally good. I did Cabaret on Broadway, and I did Gypsy once. And both of those in terms of the construction and the writing and the quality of it and what the show has to say beyond just the immediate plot were, they evoked the same feelings in me. So I think it's
you
great.
Put Fun Home right up in that class.
I do. I think it's awesome. One of the great ones. I think in hindsight, we will look at this and say that was one of the big ones.
And it's one of the great ones. Right now, it's current.
Yeah.
Come see it fresh during its national tour here.
And I love D.C. I love it here. I'm obsessed.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you here.
Thank
you. Kidding
you.
Me? Again, it's Fun Home at the National Theater now through May 13th. Get your tickets now. You're not going to regret it. I loved it the other night. So
Yes.
Bravo.
Thank you.
If you keep doing it, you know, even half as good every night, then I think our listeners are going to enjoy it.
Thank you. And thank you for coming to see it. I can't tell you how many times I go in for an interview and they're like, oh, I haven't seen it yet, but I'll try and catch it before it leaves. And you know they're not coming. Yeah. They're just doing the interview. So it does mean a lot to us that you guys take the time to see stuff.
No, but I can't even imagine doing these interviews without, you know what I mean? Like, how have we even talked about half the stuff we did without having known what we're talking about? It'd all be generalities. So.
Yep, totally.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.